Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for joining the Sexy Freedom Media podcast. My guest today is Barbara Mascaro. She is so courageous for sharing her story about abuse and trauma and narcissism with her past John Doe. I just wanted to give a trigger warning for anybody about to listen to this podcast. It is on the subject of abuse and trauma and narcissism. We are not therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, or any doctors of any form. If you seek medical attention or have a severe emergency, please reach out to your local community for professional help. I thank you all for listening. I would love to hear your reviews, or please share this if you know somebody that needs to hear it. Thank you again. Hope you guys enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Sexy Freedom Media Podcast, a place to discuss pain, passion, and pursuits.
Let's get it. I want to feel alive.
Breathe.
Make some moves.
Protect the throne. This is Sexy Freedom Media Podcast.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, perfect. Yay.
Finally getting through these technical difficulties.
Yeah. I was like, okay, we're going to figure this out.
Oh gosh, that's too much.
Well,
and I am not tech savvy at all. So this is all foreign stuff to me. I'm from the old school.
It's okay. Well, welcome to have you. It's already recording, so we're 33 seconds in. Welcome to the Sexy Freedom Media Podcast as my guest. And please introduce yourself.
My name is Barbara Mascaro, and I live in beautiful Tempe, Arizona. And it's gorgeous here today.
It is beautiful. I'm in Buckeye, Arizona. It's gorgeous. Yeah, the rain came and cleansed the area, so I love it.
Yes, that was fun. Yeah, 4 days straight.
I'd like you to just tell everybody just a little bit about you, and I'm just going to do a little intro real quick about, you know, why I asked you to be on this podcast. The subject right now is about abuse, trauma, and narcissism. And we met over Facebook in a Facebook group. And I had kind of put a post out about wanting to talk to somebody who's interested in talking about it with me. And you answered that post. And so please share a little bit about your story, Barbara.
Okay. Well, I met him when I was, we were working for, our companies did business together. And I had actually dated him like years before that. And then we kind of reconnected. And, you know, it was so weird because at first I was like, nah, you know, he didn't seem like my type. And I was just coming out of a divorce. I had two kids that were, you know, junior high and high school age. And I think I just thrusted myself like headfirst into it because he said all the right things to me. A lot of, you know, unfortunately my husband wasn't as, you know, he wasn't like a loving person. He didn't say a lot of nice words. He didn't compliment me. He didn't do any of those things. He was very almost coldish. So,
okay, so let me just ask real quick. So first of all, what is your, if you don't mind saying your age or rough age?
Well, right now I'm 57.
Okay, so you were in a previous marriage. How long was that marriage?
That marriage was for 12 years.
Okay, so 12 years, then you divorce and you meet your John Doe. And this is, and so your husband wasn't the affectionate type. And then you go into divorce and then you meet the John Doe who is overly amazing.
Oh my God. He could not say enough. I mean, you're beautiful. I love you so much. We're soulmates. You know, just over the top. And I just melted because I thought, okay, maybe I met my forever man. and things were great for a long time. I think there was just signs that I wasn't seeing that maybe other people were picking up on, you know, because I got a lot of, you know, I'm not crazy about them, I don't like them, you know, kind of stuff. But I wasn't seeing what everybody, I think what it is you choose to see what you want to see.
Yes.
And that's what I think I was doing. I was, you know, I was thinking he was this perfect guy, and he had me convinced he was this perfect guy.
What were some of the signs that made you think he was a perfect guy besides, you know, overly affectionate and adoring you? What were some other things that you felt made him a good fit?
His constant wanting to always help me out. If I was struggling financially, he wanted to help me. You know, anything that he could do, if I ever got in a jam, you know, he was going to help me out of it. You know, that type of stuff.
So he was very supportive.
In the beginning he was, yes.
And about how long was it before you started to see things turn around?
The first time I left him, you know, he just all of a sudden he went from being this outgoing and gregarious guy to all of a sudden becoming this total recluse. And he was literally reclusing me with him. So in other words, he was literally like pulling me away from my kids, my family, everybody. And it was almost like he literally wanted to just lock me in a room with him and just stay there forever.
Now, did he require, because I want to make sure there's a separation between, you know, because there's narcissism. Do you believe he had narcissism, first of all?
Oh, absolutely. Everything that I've read and I've actually studied, I've bought books on it and studied it on the internet. Everything that I read and everything that I see people write about narcissism. But I also have to add, he also had a drug addiction. So there was a lot going on there. I mean, it wasn't just the narcissism, but it was all the added stuff that came with it.
Okay. And just for all of our listeners, just to be clear, narcissism personality disorder, we're not diagnosing anybody on here. We're just saying what we, you know, through research on what we think this person had. Sometimes a lot of narcissistic people don't even know they have it themselves or are in denial. And don't right. even seek the help. So for our listeners, narcissistic personality disorder is found more commonly in men. And the symptoms include excessive need for admiration, disregard for others' feelings, an inability to handle any criticism, and a sense of entitlement. And they're best known for not having empathy. And that's how right. you can really tell the difference between a narcissist and somebody who's just basically an asshole.
Right. Because they can really hurt you really bad and just move on and think nothing of it. And then they actually twist it to it's you. You're the problem.
Right. Yes. And that's what I had endeared with mine, too. And that's why I was completely shocked by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you can't understand, you know, you're trying to do and you literally it's like walking on eggshells with these people. Because mm-hmm. you're so afraid of anything you might say or anything you might do that just like totally sends them off, you know, and it could be something very innocent that you don't even think about. And they take it, you know, the one thing that I can think of is he was always with the money, you know, always throwing money at me. But then he turned around and to his family, he threw me under the bus and made it seem like I was sucking everything out of him.
Right. So one way with you, a different way with everybody else.
I'm sorry, say again.
So he was one way with you and then to everybody else, he had a different story because he wanted to be the main attraction and liked by everybody.
Right, right. Their big thing is they want to be heroes. They want to be, you know, put up on a pedestal. That's what I found with him. I mean, he couldn't get enough, you know, attention and, you know, people thinking, oh, he's so wonderful. You know, everything that went on inside our house. He did not display anything to the outside world. Right. To the outside world, he painted a totally different picture. Like, look at me. I'm so good. You know, I treat her so good. You know, it was totally the opposite that if you would have told your story to people, they would have looked at you like you had 10 heads. They wouldn't get it.
Let me ask you something. One of the things that I noticed about, cause I've been with two narcs and, short for narcissism. And I realized one of the things that they both had in common was not just the, grandiose sense of self-importance and, you know, overspending and treating you on a pedestal, but also when they flipped, they isolated themselves. It's like they,
yes,
it wasn't like an isolation of, hey, don't talk to me right now. I need some time alone. It was more like, it was this coldness. It was like this evil energy that you just couldn't be like, it was strange.
Yeah. Well, that's what throws you off, because when that happens, you're looking around like, what happened?
What happened? Yeah. I think that was a big question for me. Cause when it did flip, I literally would start laughing and cause I didn't understand what was happening. And that's another clue. I noticed it was a different type of relationship because I would say out loud, what is happening? I was so confused. Which for a narcissism's victim, we'll call us, or people out there that are dealing with them, they find themselves in a sense of confusion, like what is happening, because the narcs have a way of turning it all towards that person as if they did something terribly wrong.
Right. And I remember feeling like when he walked through the door, I didn't know what person I was going to get. And that put me on edge all the time, because I didn't know if I was going to get that evil person coming through the door, or was it, because literally they can switch it on, off, you know? Mm-hmm. So yes. You don't know, because they go through periods where they, you know. And I think a lot of it, you know, when I had thought back, a lot of it had to do with the cheating aspect of it, because they're also known for their cheating. I think when he had somebody else, I was garbage. And then when he was alone, then all of a sudden he would focus his attention back on me. Right. And I think that's why I kept getting those different versions all the time.
Now, when you know. Said you left, so I'm assuming you said the first time, so I'm assuming you went back.
I did. I left him actually. And the funny thing was, every time I went back, it was worse.
Why did you go back?
And I think, you know, I read now and I'm learning all about the trauma bonding and how you bond to these people. And I don't know if it's that you're trying to get something out of them that keeps you intrigued and keeps you wanting to go back to try and get the resolve. But there is no resolve with them. You know, there's no end. It just... You don't get answers. You don't, you know, nothing.
Right. Did you feel that he was going to change at any time?
Yes. That was another thing. And I thought that I had the power to change him. You know, and I thought every time I left, he was going to feel sorry and feel bad and say, oh, I better not do that to her anymore. But that's not the way it happened. It actually escalated.
Right.
Because then on top of everything else, now he could say, oh, you left me. You know what I mean?
Yes. And just for our listeners, for anybody wanting to know what trauma bonding is, I'm just going to read it right from Wikipedia. It's a problem that many people have. It's when you are kind of going back to, actually, let me read this other one, because this is, I think it's really good for people to understand what trauma bonding is for us who have been through abuse. Give me just a second here. So trauma bonding occurs as the result of ongoing cycles of abuse in which the intermittent reinforcement of reward and punishment creates powerful emotional bonds that are resistant to change.
Right. Right. Because when I think about it, I always thought it was all going to be better. You know, once I left, everything was going to straighten out, and he would be great when I first went back, but it would last maybe a week or two at most. And then actually the abuse was escalated worse than it was before.
Did you tell friends? Did you tell family? I mean, who did you go to for support?
In the beginning, I didn't. I was protecting him. Mm-hmm. So I understand when they say, why do people protect their abusers? You do. And I don't know if it's because you don't want to admit that you put yourself in that kind of a situation. I don't really know what the reason behind it is. But I know that I used to stand up for him. You know, if somebody came at me and, you know, something about him, I would jump up right away and defend him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like that, you know, and then when it started to get really bad, then I finally wound up going to a domestic violence group.
Hmm.
And I met a lot of girls there, you know, going through the same thing that I was going through. And I remember I was even terrified just to go there because I was afraid he was going to follow me. And then I guess it just came to some point where I said, I didn't care anymore. And I would literally bring the literature home with me. So I went from like not wanting him to know at all to I just don't care. You know,
and how long were you with him? How many years in total?
We lived together for 14 years on and off.
How many?
14.
Whew, that is a long time. Yeah. Very long time.
Oh, it is. Oh, it is. And what they do to you, I mean, literally in the relationship, you basically, your self-esteem hits the floor. You don't feel good about yourself. You're walking around confused. You're almost like in a total fog. I can remember I used to pull into the grocery store and just sit in the car and just bawl my eyes out. And then have to pull myself together and walk into that store. I mean, it was just, you know, crazy stuff. You know, I mean, if I went into... There was so many things that happened and so many things he did to me that it's hard to, I mean, it would take a whole nother podcast just to even go through all the things that happened.
When you did leave him, how did you get out? What were the main key points of getting yourself completely out?
So let me, and this I'm telling for the audience because I think it's important for people to know that narcs can be dangerous. I would say about a year before I finally made the decision to leave, he had actually fired a gun at me and the bullet went into the wall and just missed my head.
Mm.
That was one of my big wake-up calls. And I mean, we weren't in a fight. There was nothing going on, nothing happening. He literally just walked through the door, grabbed a gun out of the drawer and fired and almost hit me in the head. What wound up happening after that, I was in like this self-denial, like it didn't even happen. It's almost like I guess kind of like a PTSD reaction,
mm-hmm.
where I I wouldn't look at it or think about it, or I had to erase it in order to go on. And then what happened was, once I started going to the group, I started realizing and getting strength from the group, from the other people in the group, from the counselor. And I started to feel a little bit stronger, like I was getting some sense of power back, because I had lost, you know, like I said, all self-esteem, all power, everything. It was gone. But when I started to be able to get it back, that's when I finally made the decision. He had turned around one day because our lease was due, and he said something about signing over another lease, but then I'm going to have to pay the extra money. And finally I said, Barbara, you have got to get yourself out of here. Yeah. You cannot survive with this man another year. Mm. And I looked at him and I said, point blank, I said, well, I'm going to move. And he looked at me and he said, oh, okay, you want to move and go somewhere else? I said, no, just me. Wow. Everything just kind of came to a head. I wound up having to, he took a bunch of weapons and laid them all out on the bed. And I ran to a neighbor. I remember having a cup of coffee in my hand. I was shaking so bad that the coffee was in the cup. And I said, I told the neighbor, and he didn't want to get involved. And so I wound up just calling the police, and literally a SWAT team just showed up. And
now, was that the day that you told him you were leaving?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that obviously was a huge traumatic experience for you. And I applaud you for being so courageous to stand your ground and make that move to get out of it. But do you feel, so when the police came, was that kind of like a reassurance, like you're getting out for good?
Yeah, it was a bunch of mixed emotions, actually. It was, you're going to think, and the audience will probably, everybody will think this is crazy, but on some level, I pray for him. But then on another level, I knew I just couldn't live like that anymore.
Right.
So I knew I was doing the best thing for me. And at that point, I had made a plan to leave the state and live with my sister for a while. So that was already in play. You know.
Okay, sorry about that. The it just abruptly cut off. So,
that's okay.
You were saying that you moved in with your sister, so you had a plan you'd already put in place, and I think that
right.
is something that's really good to mention about, you know, how to get out. I think a lot of us who do end up getting out, we already start devising a plan of some sort to get out. So that's definitely a first step to start thinking about what you're going to do, what steps you're going to take, and then start putting things in place for when shit hits the fan and you've got to run.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's one good thing that the domestic violence groups are good for, because they will help you devise a plan to do that.
Yes. Now, when you left, and now you mm-hmm. are, let's just say, a couple weeks without him, and you know mm-hmm. you're not going to go back, you're for certain this time, what were your feelings? What were your emotions? Because I'm sure you had mixed emotions about it because you were with him for so long.
Yes. I don't think I ever questioned my decision. It's almost like if somebody very close to you had died. There's just this grieving, this really bad grieving process you go through. And it was that, and I was isolated. I didn't want to interact with anybody at that point. That's one of the things I still struggle with today is the trust issues. It's very difficult to let people in and trust people, I find.
You know what? I find that too. And that's something that I'm glad you brought that up about, you know, where are you now? How many years has it been since you've had no contact with your John Doe?
So I'm going to say now it's probably been about, I did have a little bit of contact when I moved to Florida, because he called me. He still had my cell number because my number wasn't changed at that point. Mm-hmm. And he called me there. And of course it was to talk about him and what he went through in jail and all that stuff, because I guess I was supposed to feel guilty about that. And I would say that was probably the last time. And that was, oh God, you're looking at probably about 4 years ago now.
Do you feel, does any part of you still miss him? And do you think that's because of the trauma bonding?
Yes. I think about him probably a lot more than people would think I do.
You know, I find that a lot when I've talked to people who were involved with narcs, because I mean, I find that with myself too. And it's like, there's what you said perfectly about grieving. You're grieving somebody because you thought that was your person. You thought that was your soulmate because of how connected you felt in the beginning. And
exactly.
Now, do you feel, and I got to ask this, based on the research I've done, apparently it's not real, it's fake, but it felt real. It didn't feel fake at all. Do you feel like that too? But I mean, do you feel like you were in kind of some, do you feel like you were with somebody who had no, they were completely false?
I think that I was, I don't know if this is true or not. I feel like I was with somebody who was false a lot of the time. But I think that there were, but it was sporadic, you know, it was here and there. But
Barbara, you cut off for like a couple seconds there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that there were sporadic moments when I got a little of the real him, but for the most part, most of it I think was fake.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Now, what do you watch out for now? Like when you left him, now it's been 4 years and you don't talk to him, and you maybe meet somebody else and you find them kind of interesting. In the back of your mind, are you still, you said you have a hard time trusting. How do you move forward when you feel that distrust in men now or in people?
I can't. I'm stuck.
You feel stuck still?
I still feel stuck. Yeah. I know that I have to go out and do it. So I'll take two steps forward and I'll take one step back.
And what step forward have you taken so far?
I've tried, you know, I've gone on dates. I find now for me, it's hard to let anybody in. I literally have walls up that are, you know, airtight. And I feel bad because I'm sure there are guys that are out there that were good guys that I probably met. But I just, anytime I see any little inkling of anything that he was like, my walls just go up and I shut down and that's it. I can't, I don't know how to get beyond it. I'm literally just floundering.
Right. And so one of the things that I've noticed about my own healing and recovering and being able to, you know, learn to trust, learn to love, learn to open myself back up has been opening up my throat chakra and my heart chakra, which is basically what we're doing now. I realized the first time I started talking openly about it, and being mm-hmm. heard started allowing myself to release, you know, what I was holding inside. So I know that this right. is therapeutic for me. So I'm sure this is going to be therapeutic for you. And you mentioned about wanting to write a book. And as an author myself, I 100,000% agree that you should write a book.
Yeah. I just have to find somebody. I mean, I could write words. I don't know how to, you know, I probably would need editing and, you know, I just don't know. I want to. That's my goal, is to write a book, because I mean, my life story, like I had told you earlier, goes way back to, you know, I mean, there's stuff way in my past that even still affects me till today.
Well, you have the number one ingredient to write a book, and that ingredient is just the wanting to write it. And I think, you know, right. for somebody who's written two now, for me, it was just starting, and that's all it takes. Just getting on a computer, getting on a Word doc, and just writing. If you don't have a computer, getting a journal-like pamphlet out and just start writing. And that's honestly the best step you can take. I didn't get an editor until I was 100 pages in.
Right.
So it comes later. But I think that women and men out there who have been through trauma and abuse need more stories to be told. Because when this happened to me, I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know anybody who'd been through this. And maybe it's because a lot of people didn't want to talk about it, because they were in fear of other judgment. They were in fear of looking weak. And especially for me, for it to happen not just once, but two times. And the second time, you know, I'm a very strong woman. I just got done speaking in Vegas, and it literally happened right after that. And it shook my world. And I was really, I couldn't believe it was happening to me. You know, for being such a warrior, for being such a strong woman, a leadership, a woman who inspires people. I couldn't believe it. And I remember I was down for 7 days, and I told myself, you're not going to stay down. Your voice needs to be heard. You know how to do the healing. You need to do the work. And that's where, you know, the work that needs to be done to get us unstuck. It's like taking that same courage to get out of that relationship and now mm-hmm. courage within yourself, which I've found for me is, you know, right. to be able to help others, you've got to start taking those steps to help yourself. And I think you sharing your story is honestly, it's just so courageous. And I posted that post quite a few places and you stepped up, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate this.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy to do, but you know, somewhere inside, you know, I think you're just a lot stronger sometimes than you think, you know?
Right. And I've noticed that in this, you know, getting out of that relationship, it's been a roller coaster of emotions going up, going down. Some days I feel strong. Mm-hmm. Some days I'm crying because I,
right.
you know, when this person comes into your life, gives you everything you ever wanted, and then all of a sudden flips on you and tells you what a piece of shit you are. And you're just like, what is happening? And then you get the courage to leave and run. You are now dealing with not just what they did, but that they triggered other things within you. And, you know, me having a background of coming from abuse and trauma, it opened all of that. And, you know, even though I've done so much healing on things in my past, it just brought it all back up. And, yeah. and I'm sure, did that happen with you too?
Yes, it did. I went into a very dark place for a long time. And it was like almost all the traumas that I had been through were just rehashing in my mind.
You're kind of fading out there, Barbara. Can you speak up a little bit?
Yes, I said like all the traumas that I had gone through, both with him and in the past when I was younger, all that stuff just came back up again.
Right.
You know, it was like all drudged up, and I was just in such a very dark place for a long time, you know.
And how are you now? Like now in the present moment, minus all the coronavirus stuff going around. How do you feel? Like where do you foresee yourself going right now?
I am doing okay day by day. I do what I have to do. Am I living the life I want to be living right now? Absolutely not. It's almost like looking at a dream right now. This is the way, you know, the way life is, the way I want life to be. I wish I could know how to get back to the person I was before all this happened. And that's the struggle. So because people know me. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so you want to get back to the person you were before. And I think that's something, you know, valuable in this conversation, because that is exactly how I felt. And that's exactly how a lot of women I've talked to feel when they leave, when they're trying to rebuild and get out of stuck. They want that confident woman that they were before, you know, this person came in and rocked their world in shambles. And
right.
And I get that, because that's, you want to be that person again. But one thing I've learned from my own situation is that woman was a couple of years ago, because obviously it happened over time. And
right.
I want traits of that person, and I've got to instill them into the person I am now with the knowledge I have now, which honestly makes me even way more fantastic, because now you've grown into this mature goddess of a woman, of a queen, you know? And I really can see that for you. And I know what it's like to just feel like it's a dream away, but I think you're completely on a great, great path, whereas where you once were and where many women were. And that's one of the things that brought me out of being stuck, is that I kept thinking about all the women who are still in these relationships, who are still, you know, behind closed doors sobbing, who are scared, who don't know how, who rely on those, that financial dependence. You know, they're just, their soul is getting sucked out of them. Right. And they're being thrown crumbs to feed on of this, you know, affection that they once had an abundance of. And they've lost themselves, or they're completely losing themselves. And I just think to myself, I owe it to them, because I was strong enough to get out. I owe it to them to show them how it's done once you're out, to be stronger, wiser, you know, more bolder, and then go out there and share my voice as we're doing right now, Barbara, right, for somebody out there that may hear it and say, if they could do it, I could do it. Exactly. I could barely hear you.
I said exactly. I know. Yeah, because, you know, years ago when I was with him, I would have never thought of even leaving. And I actually did it, and I never thought in a million years I would. And there is, I mean, where there's a will, there's a way. You know,
I
know I tell a lot of people, you know, on the sites and stuff, the narcissistic sites, and you know, that are in this situation, you know, when they're in a really bad spot, I tell them, go to a shelter, because you're going to get other people to support you and help you find your way out. You know, that I think for me was crucial. Because had I never gone to those groups, I don't know where I would be today. I don't even know if I'd be here talking to you. You know, so, you know, it's just, you have to get support. That's huge. You know?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I believe support is huge. I believe health is very important. It's very easy to self-sabotage yourself into thinking you're not strong enough. You're going to go through a mental war. Mm-hmm. When you try to get out of these things, you're going to go through a mental war. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're going to actually feel, I don't want to say worse, because I don't think you're going to feel worse, but you're really going to be, you have to go through that dark side for a while, but you know, slowly you'll be able to pull yourself and gain strength along the way, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I definitely, you know, one of the things I'm going to mention is when I could hear myself saying, you know, a month later, after no contact, a month later, I'm starting to get my groove back, and I can hear myself inside somewhere saying, well, maybe we should check up on him. Maybe we should reach out. And I'm just like, where is that coming from? Because I know that's not the me now. That person that still wants contact is fear-based. It's somebody who is used to the trauma bonding. It's used to being, you know, hot, cold. And right. That's no longer who I am anymore. So I have to be delicate with that voice.
Right.
And tell myself, look, that voice is a voice of a past hurt that right. is okay with getting hurt. Because that person still lives in me from growing up in an abusive home and right. thinking that that is the definition of love. And now that I'm older and I'm wiser, I know it's not. So I have to tell myself and that small voice, there's no going back. You will find somebody. You will find somebody better. You thought you couldn't make it without A. You thought you couldn't make it without B. You thought you couldn't make it without C. But look at you now, girl. So I have to keep telling myself that.
That's right. That's right. And it is. It's you know, each step you make is building on your self-esteem and getting you back to where you need to be. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, Barbara, gosh, thank you so much for talking with me. We're going to wrap it up, but okay. Any last words for anybody out there who is, you know, going through this or in this, any last word or inspiration or encouragement you can give them?
I mean, like I said, go get support, go to a domestic violence shelter, if it's that bad. It's a starting point. It's going to feel to you like maybe, you know, you don't want to give into it. But if you go there and you start getting support from people and people pointing you in a better direction, you know, you're going to be so much the better for it. I mean, it'll turn your life around. And that's really
love that.
Yeah. So
love it. All right, Barbara, where can people find you?
Well, I mean, people can find me. You can just go on my Facebook. My name is Barbara Mascaro, MASCARO. And if you just pull up on my Facebook, I mean, if anybody wants to just get in touch with me and talk, I'm open and willing.
Awesome. Well, okay. Thank you so much, Barbara. You know, I would love to see where your journey takes you in the next, you know, couple months, couple years. I definitely am going to be following you and keeping up. And thank you so much for coming on. And everybody, if you have any messages you want to give to Barbara, you can't find her, you can always reach out to sexyfreedomnow@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your reviews, any questions. You can also go on to Facebook page, Sexy Freedom Media. My Instagram account is Sexy Freedom Media, or my personal account is Hell of a Journey, and that's Hell with one L, H-E-L. And love to hear your reviews again. Please share. Anybody that needs to hear this message, I appreciate you. Barbara, I appreciate you. Oh, thank you so much, Barbara, for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Helen, and best of luck. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Want to hear more?
Visit us at sexyfreedommedia.com.